David Welk. I'm recording a podcast called Writer's Cast. Today is January 22nd, 2009. I am with Geraldine Brooks, the author of, most recently, People of the Book, and Pulitzer Prize winner for her novel March. And she is, while I'm in Connecticut on the phone, she's in San Diego, California, on a tour for the paperback of People of the Book. Hello, Geraldine.
Hi.
How are you today?
Yeah, good, thank you.
You're in the middle of this tour, I take it. You've been on the road for a little while?
I have indeed, yes. I've been down south, and now I'm out west.
And are you exhausted yet?
Oh, goodness gracious. No, it's a lot less exhausting than my real life.
I mean with children?
Yes.
Yes, I know how that is. But how are you away? Is this a long trip that you're away on for?
Yeah, I'm going to 17 cities, so it's it's a lot of airports, which is the hard part of it. You know, I'm tired of getting undressed in front of strangers every day at the security line. But
right.
Apart from that, it's fun to get out and connect with readers.
Well, I noticed on your tour, you're going to some of the, at least at the end of the tour, it looks like you're going to some independent bookstores, some of the last remaining, shall we say. I think, were you at Powell's recently?
I was at Powell's this week, and I was at Warwick's in La Jolla last night, which was fantastic.
Oh, that's great. How many people came by?
Oh, a ton, yeah.
That's
terrific. It was packed. It was lovely.
Well, I think you're obviously a big draw. I think people really like your books.
I think this book in particular has connected with people, and now that it's out in paperback, a lot of book groups are taking it up.
Yeah, I noticed in the back of the paperback, I read the book in hardcover, but I noticed in the back of the paperback they have a guide for reading groups. Did you participate in that part, or was that done by somebody at Penguin?
It's usually done by somebody in the academic world,
yeah.
And then I get to take a look at it before it goes into the book.
So you felt pretty good about the questions they were asking for
the discussion.
Well, I think that when you're a writer of historical fiction, you know, you always have that tension between the actual fact and the of stories that you tell, and the made up part, which is, I think that's very fertile. That's fertile ground for discussion.
I don't sort of see it as a tension, really. I think it's the nature of the beast, and sort of the contract that I make with the reader is I'll follow the line of fact as far as it leads, but when that line of fact starts to fray and get lost, and where the historical record is silent, then I'll use imagination to fill the voids.
Well, and with the People of the Book, I think there are so many places where there are voids. It was very, though that provided you with a pretty rich opportunity, I think.
Yeah, because you're talking about the story of a manuscript that is, almost 600 years old. And the further you get back in time, the less we can know for sure.
Well, I thought you were brilliant in the way that you imagined each of those periods where the Haggadah was known to exist, and then you kind of went from there. I thought that was really, I think that's part of what makes the book so appealing, is that you captured those periods so evocatively.
It was fun to research different times that were so disparate in the ways, that people lived and the way they dealt with each other, the times when people were able to accept difference and kind of had multicultural societies that were very recognizable to us, and then other times when this need to demonize otherness would rise up and smash all that apart. And it seemed to be that this book had lived through so many instances of that particular catastrophe in Spain, where convivencia, where Muslims and Christians and Jews lived together, being smashed apart by Inquisition and forced exile, and then the rise of fascism, of course, and then most recently the ultra-nationalist ethnic cleansers in the Bosnian War. And this same little Hebrew book had made its way and found its protectors in all those situations.
So do you feel, I mean, just to bring this around to current times, do you feel that where are we in the continuum?
I felt a great sense of dread that we were getting very close to this let's demonize the other. When you read the blogs about what we are entitled to do to, you know, so-called terrorists in Guantanamo, people who have never been before a court and have never even seen the evidence against them, there seemed to be a great willingness to suspend belief in our common humanity, but I'm hoping that we've moved into a better era now.
It does feel that way. I think we all feel, well, not we all, but certainly a lot of people feel empowered in a period of change. And maybe, maybe there's a way of looking at people of the book in that context. I think the Haggadah is a very special thing in the first place, and to have it be this symbol that draws people together, I think maybe that's something that's worthwhile telling about. But how do you feel that this novel sets you up for the next thing? This book has been tremendously well received. So was March Before It, which won the Pulitzer Prize. What do you do next?
Oh, you just do what you always do. You find a story from the past that intrigues you, where you can know some things and you can't know everything. And you just sit down and you write it as best you can, and that's all you can do. That's what I do every day.
Well, are you working on one now?
I am, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Do you want to talk about it, or is that better not to discuss?
It's very early days, but it's another story of faith in the time of catastrophe. And it's set very close to home for me. I live on Martha's Vineyard. And it's a first contact story. It's about the early days of the first English settlers on the island and the clash of cultures between the Wampanoag Indians, who had lived there for centuries and had a very different belief system, and then this band of English Puritans arrives. So it's looking at some of those issues.
Oh, well, that's something I'll be very interested in. It's I grew up in New England, and actually I go to Martha's Vineyard every summer, and I've been long studying the history of Native American contact with settlers in New England myself. So
As you know, it's a very grim story most of the time, but the vineyard was a little different because the Wampanoag on the vineyard never were displaced, and they're still there, and they still have a thriving culture. And it's interesting to look at the vineyard as a little microcosm about how things might have gone differently.
Yeah, it is true that they're there, although it is kind of interesting to see how the dominant culture still marginalizes Native Americans and doesn't really recognize them, at least most of the time. So maybe that's something that your new book will reveal.
Yeah, well, it's obviously a very fertile area for exploration, but what is intriguing me the most is kind of the beauty and the depth of traditional belief and the way that the Christian missionaries interacted with those beliefs.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah, I just picked up to reread a book that I read a long time ago called The Last Algonquin. Mm-hmm. Which is a book about the last surviving Algonquin Indian who was living in the Bronx up until 1924. And it, I think it's similar kind of to the lifestyle of the Wampanoags in Martha's Vineyard, you know, very closely related to the shoreline. And it's just, it's an, really, it is interesting to think about how short a period of time ago that was,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, that Europeans arrived here and somehow managed to convince themselves that no one else was here.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, the I guess the other book I wanted to ask you about was March, which I have not read, but which a lot of people I know have read, are fascinated with. And I was really interested in the story that you talked about in one of your interviews with about starting people of the book and then finding the story of the March kind of taking you over and moving, you know, going to write that book and then coming back to write to finish people of the book. Was that was that difficult?
It was just necessary. What happened, you know? So I had written Year of Wonders, my first novel, and it looked at a year in the life of an English village in 1665 when bubonic plague came to the village, and the villagers took a unique decision to quarantine themselves. So that was the true story that that book was based on. But it was very clear cut. The narrative arc was the year of plague, you know. So then I started on People of the Book, and it's this sprawling story, and I wasn't at all sure how to tell it and how to contain it. And so I had written various drafts of certain sections, but I didn't know how it was all going to come together. And then in through the window flew this idea about the absent father and Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. And we know only from Louisa May that he's away being a chaplain to the Union troops in the Civil War. And I started to think about what kind of a war an idealistic abolitionist transcendentalist like the father of the March girls might have had, and the whole idea of idealists at war and what happens when you go to war believing your cause is just but find yourself doing all kinds of injustice in the pursuit of that cause. So that to me was so straightforward in how to tell that story, because again it was a year away at war, because Mr. March comes back to his family at the end of Little Women as it was originally published. So I knew he went to war, I knew he got desperately ill, and I knew he survived. And so I decided to just go ahead and write that book because I knew how to write it. And then when I finished, I had more confidence to go back and tackle the structural issues with People of the Book. And I found that while the book was sitting in the drawer, I guess the characters talked among themselves a bit, because when I got it out, it was much easier.
Well, I was going to ask you about the characters for you when you write, because I get the feeling for most writers that it's either that the writer, the characters inhabit the writer, or the writer inhabits the characters, and it's hard to tell which. And it certainly feels like you're inhabiting the characters in People of the Book.
For me, it's more like hearing voices. You know, they start talking to you. And if they don't start talking to you, you really haven't got anything. So you have to do enough research until you start to hear a voice very clearly in your head. And then that voice will define that person in a way, and who they are will tell you what they're likely to do. And then they, once they're set in motion, they go off in all kinds of directions that you don't expect.
Well, with, do you feel like you're done with these characters, or will they? Do they have more to tell you?
No, they tell me everything, and then I choose what of the everything to put in the book. But I know what happens to all of them.
Right, so you're done. You have closure.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
No, I've talked to some writers who feel like there's, you know, something is not quite finished when they finish a novel, that there's some characters kind of rises up and nags at them and says, you know, I want to be told too.
Oh, I'm sure. I've got a lot of very naggy characters, truculent types. So who knows?
Well, maybe.
But I don't have any intentions at this point to revisit them. I've got. I'm very, you know, deeply immersed in the novel that will be called Caleb's Crossing, and then I have another idea after that that's set back in my homeland, Australia. So I'm kind of anxious to meet a whole raft of new voices.
Well, I think it'll be interesting for you to go back to Australia. Do you have this feeling? I mean, some of the things you've written about, it sounds like you had a sense of dislocation early on when you were young in Australia and feeling that Australian culture itself didn't exist, that it was just a British overlay that made you uncomfortable.
That was true then. It's certainly not true anymore.
Yeah.
That Australia has changed so much in my lifetime, I think more than any country in peacetime possibly could change. And it was fascinating to grow up in a time when everything was up for grabs and be a part of a culture finding its own voice and its own confidence. And it really gives you a very optimistic view of the world and of the capacity to change.
So do you feel like, as a writer, do you identify still as an Australian, or do you identify as an American, or do you not identify at all?
I'm feeling at this point like a citizen of the world. I have deep love for Australia. I love every step I take there. I love the air and the light and the sense of humor, and I miss it very much. I love Martha's Vineyard, and I've got very deep roots in New England, as it turns out. My father's family arrived in Massachusetts in 1630, so I feel, you know, that I'm tapping into a part of my own story.
Well, it certainly comes across in the subjects that you pick to write about, that you don't feel bound by any particular geography, of one or over the other, that you are able to travel among all these different places.
Yeah, and I think that's a very Australian way to feel, too, because you grow up very turned out to the world when you live so far removed from the sources of your own cultural heritage, you know?
Yeah. Well, you said, I think there was one of the things you said that really struck me is, I will have to learn it like a foreigner. I think you were talking about that. That sounds like, you know, you feeling that you're always a foreigner.
Yeah, I think so.
That's interesting. Well, I really appreciate the chance to talk to you. I hope you don't mind this sort of dislocation of a telephone interview, but it's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Well, great talking to you,
and thank you
very much.
Oh, and good luck with the tour, and when you get back to New England, I hope you'll feel, you know, comfortable there.
I'll feel more comfortable when the weather warms up, I'll tell you.
Well, the way this winter's going, we don't know whether it ever will.
Yeah, indeed. All right, then. Thanks so much.
Thank you.